and welcome to another Trev and Ben podcast. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Trev. How are you?
Angry.
Oh, dear. We're only a few seconds in.
You know how things tend to wind me up a lot these days? I'm always tetchy. I'm always very tetchy these days. I've reached an age where I think the tetchiness is so... It's set in now. I don't think there's any way of getting around it. The tetchiness is in. I even got tetchy yesterday because the my Sky box went down.
Right? Oh, I got a text from Sky today apologising for the service going down.
Oh,
I didn't notice.
No apology.
Oh.
Now you've made me even more angry. Why am I not getting an apology?
I don't know.
I was furious.
I didn't even notice.
It crashed. I was so furious, I went to bed.
So today at 10:55 a.m. from Sky,
yeah,
we're extremely sorry if you experienced issues with your Sky Q services recently.
Really?
These issues have been fixed. If you're still having trouble,
yeah,
please switch off your box at the mains for 30 seconds, then back on. For mini box issues, also reboot the main box. So not just sorry, extremely sorry.
I'm just checking my messages on my phone. Fuck all.
Well, maybe you're not quite the valued customer that I am.
Well, considering the amount I pay monthly for the fucking tawdry service. So I was so tetchy and angry about it. I just thought, I can't stay up now. It's spoiled everything. The evening's spoiled. It was about, I don't know, 10:30 or whatever, but I just thought, I'm going to bed now. That's it. There's no point in staying up anymore.
I mean, it could have been worse. It could have been, you know, because I know that you enjoyed it yesterday as of today of recording, but it could have been in the middle of the FA Cup final. It could have all gone down. Heaven forbid, it could have gone down during Eurovision.
Well, that would have been fine. If I would prefer them to take it down purposely during Eurovision. I mean, I cannot believe the thing still exists. I can't believe how long it's on for. Now, I'm not one to normally complain about, my license fee shouldn't go to... I don't mind the license fee. I know other people don't want to pay it. That's fine, right? I don't mind it. I think the BBC do some good stuff. But I don't really want my portion of the license fee going on anything to do with Eurovision. If I can opt out of that when I pay my license fee, can I make sure that mine goes towards football coverage, good drama, news, but next to the Eurovision, put a big cross so that my money doesn't go towards that.
It's a democracy. I'm sure the people who really enjoyed Eurovision probably didn't give too much of a hoot about the FA Cup final. It's a democracy. We share the channels. We share the time, okay?
It's fine.
It's not a dictatorship.
And the good thing is there are lots of other things. I didn't need to put... I did turn Eurovision on just as I went to bed. I flicked across the channels and it just for about 3 or 4 seconds I had Eurovision on and it made me angry.
In three or 4 seconds?
Yes. There was some bloke in what I can only describe as a bin bag, looking like he was just about to climb a ladder, singing. And I just thought, no, what is this shit? Turn it off. I just thought, oh my, like, I know, I don't understand the whole Eurovision for all. I get people love it. They have parties. I'm not saying don't have it. I just don't get it. All right. And I can switch it off. I don't have to have anything to do with it. I just don't get it.
Well, I didn't watch a single second of Eurovision. And I understand, apparently, from seeing news alerts on my phone, we did dreadfully again, like 19th out of 26.
Was it 19th? Right. Yeah. Well, it's better than normal, isn't it? Normally we come last, don't we?
Yeah. Yeah. I think we got a handful of votes, but it was still abysmal by all accounts. Yeah.
Right. Who won? Do we know who won?
I think it might have been Austria.
Austria. Well, there we go. I sort of don't mind, there's art in it, there's music in it, that's fine. But when I did have to watch Eurovision over the years on some occasions, if I was with family members who were watching it, it's the endless voting round that I can't really stand either, because that shouldn't need to take so long, particularly now in 2025, right? We could all just, rather than going round to the... I don't know if they still do this. I haven't watched it for years. But when I last watched it, it was probably about, I don't know, 15 years ago. They'd have the presenter, right? And they go, let's now go to Germany. Hello, Germany. And they'd say, yes, hello, Germany calling. Hello, lovely to see you all. I hope you're having a great time at Eurovision. And I was the German people for Eurovision. And then they go, and it would, and I don't know how many countries, well, 26, presumably, if that's how many people are taking part. And I said, oh my God, like, just fucking dial them in, like, sit on a computer. It can be done now. Send them all in. It could be done in 5 minutes. The winner
I feel the same about the Super Bowl. I've got a mate who adores the Super Bowl. He takes the next day off work.
It is on overnight in our time, isn't it?
Yeah, it's 1 o'clock in the morning and it goes on for fucking hours. And the halftime show lasts about, I'd say, a good 45 minutes. I'm not sure. Maybe even an hour. And you get about, I'd say, 5 minutes of action over 3 hours. And I just think, surely to God, we could hurry this up a bit.
Do they not? I mean, I don't know the rules of American football. What is the standard halftime period of an American football game?
I can find that out easily for you.
Could you ask Giselle?
I can absolutely ask Giselle if you'd like that. Yeah, I mean, let's have a word. Giselle, what is the standard halftime interval in an American football game?
Hey, the standard halftime interval in an American football game is typically around 12 minutes in the NFL. For college football, it can be a bit longer, usually around 20 minutes.
Giselle, how long is the Super Bowl halftime show?
The Super Bowl halftime show is usually longer than a regular season halftime. It typically lasts around 25 to 30 minutes to accommodate the musical performances and the elaborate stage setups.
So I don't think they should be making halftimes longer to accommodate that. This year, I think they're going to have in the Champions League final, which is in a couple of weeks' time as we record, they're going to have the first ever halftime show in that, but it will, I'm assuming, be within the 15 minutes of a regular halftime break. If they start messing about with the halftime period in the Champions League, I mean, it's the sort of thing I would go on some sort of march about. Do you know what I mean? I'd get a placard and a march and go to the UEFA headquarters and say, no, do not. I don't think they are going to mess with it, but it's creeping in. I don't like it. There's no need to have a halftime show at the Champions League final. I forget who's performing. I think it's Coldplay are performing. They don't need that coverage. We don't.
No.
People in the ground don't need it. They're getting a drink. They're having a piss. It's halftime. That's what halftime's for. The players, they're inside. They're having their team talk. They're having a cup of tea, a break. That's what it's for. It's not for Coldplay to plug their new album. It's not, just leave it alone.
I mean, I'm a recent convert to the darts. I used to sort of look down my nose a little bit at the darts. Being more of a snooker man, a bit more of a gentleman's game than just hurling spears into the wall. But in recent years, it's won me over. Massively.
Yes.
And I really respect how a match of darts can be over in about 15 minutes if someone's on good form. And
depending on the format, yes. Yes.
I mean, and there's the Premier League, first to sixth, but bang, 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 in about 10 minutes, we're done.
Yeah.
There was no halftime break, no interval, no faffing around. The crowd are making the most of it, halftime or not. It just seems good fun. So, but it'll be a matter of time before we get a darts Premier League halftime fucking show, and it'll be pom-poms and Coldplay and gone for 2 hours.
You get the cheerleaders when the players come on. You've already got the pom-poms, but I don't think there's no need for any more. But there's enough entertainment in the darts. I mean, I do think with the Premier League is brilliant. I very rarely have any criticism of the darts. The one thing I would say about the Premier League that I find slightly annoying is that if a player wins the night, there's three matches they will play in an evening. Do we need the walk-on music every time?
Like, can we not just have it the long,
first
though.
Time?
Oh, God, do they do it every single time?
Yeah, just have it the first time. I don't think it's needed. Mind you, the crowd love it. It's all part of it, but I find it a little bit, oh, here we go again.
You see, we've introduced the pom-poms, which you don't seem to mind. I wonder why. We've introduced the ring walk.
Although, can I just say, no, I mean, what do I know about dancing? But those girls do seem to do the same dance to whatever the song is. It's like they've learnt one dance.
So we've allowed in the pom-poms. We've introduced the boxing ring walk at every chance. So it's starting to go that way. It's only a matter of time before we get the halftime show.
They do it in Formula One now. Like, the Americans got hold of Formula One, they turn it all into a big old show. You know, they have, I think it's in the American one, they have like a big concert. And it's like, it's a race. Doesn't need all the stuff around it. It never needed it in the past. Doesn't need it now. No, leave it alone.
I was hinting at some sort of misogyny with the pom-pom reference a minute ago.
Yeah.
But they could have naked ladies on trampolines and I still wouldn't watch the fucking Formula One.
I bet you would. I bet you would. That's an absolute lie, Ben. If I said to you, oh, by the way, Ben, Formula One have now introduced naked ladies on trampolines at the start of the race, you'd be watching it.
So, well, anyway, going back to the beginning of this, is this why you're angry?
No, none of that is really what made me angry, but what you've done is you've drawn out many aspects of anger that are consistently running through my veins. I was reading this, I read stuff about science, Ben. I like to know what the scientists are up to.
Yes, keeping an eye on the scientists.
Yeah, yeah, because, you know, they do a lot of good stuff. Sometimes I sort of think, why are you doing that? And I read this thing this week. This is the headline. Lab-grown T-Rex leather handbag created using protein found in fossil.
Hang on a minute. That's a lot of information to take in at once.
Yes, digest it, please.
Lab-grown T-Rex leather handbags created.
Mm. Yes.
So they've managed to sort of Jurassic Park,
yes,
Tyrannosaurus Rex, to harvest it for its skin to yes. make leather handbags.
I mean, what they've done is that it's a synthetic, so it's not exactly recreating T-Rex skin. They've used a synthetic gene, basically, but they've used proteins found in fossils to sort of as the base of it, and they are growing this leather, synthetic leather, but based on T-Rex skin. And I just thought, who thinks this is a good idea? If you've got the technology to be making synthetic skin, don't use it for fucking handbags. I'm sorry. Like, that's capitalism gone fucking crazy, isn't it? It's like, they've gone, here's a great thing we've got. We could maybe use this to help, I don't know, burn victims.
I was going
to
say the local burn ward, yeah.
Yeah, people who need skin. Why not use it to grow synthetic human skin? But no, someone's gone, well, you can sell extortionately priced T-Rex skinned handbags so the people who star in Made in Chelsea can walk around saying, look at my T-Rex handbag. What are they doing? Leave sort of T-Rex to rest. T-Rex is extinct. If you're going to bring T-Rex back in any way, bring T-Rex back full stop. I always think that would be a great thing, to bring back the dinosaurs. I'm waiting for the day they can do that. I doubt I will live long enough to see the return of the dinosaurs, but one day someone will. There will genuinely be a Jurassic Park.
Well, like you said, shows like Made in Chelsea or that'd be a good one. Love Island. Mm. Let's, in the middle of the series of Love Island, release a Tyrannosaurus Rex onto the island. I'd watch.
Yeah. That would make it far more interesting. I think introduce a T-Rex into many shows. Bring a T-Rex in the middle of Eurovision. I might start watching it then.
Yes.
If you suddenly introduce, maybe not a T-Rex. A T-Rex might be, you know, perhaps the most dangerous of the dinosaurs, but just bring a smaller, like a velociraptor or something.
I think they're fairly deadly, velociraptors.
Yeah, but, you know, a small pop group on Eurovision might be able to take on a velociraptor midway through. You know, imagine Graham Norton going, oh, there's now the velociraptor's been introduced. And the band, the three cheeky fellas from Albania, are now taking it on. They're taking it on with a keyboard and a guitar. They'd come on. I'm not doing Graham Norton's voice, by the way, because I can't do an impression. But the T-Rex, oh, he's eaten them all. The three cheeky chappies from Albania are now part of the digestive system of the T-Rex. A velociraptor, there might be a chance that would make it more interesting. Imagine how that would affect the voting. It would become less political, wouldn't it?
It would.
Just go, we hate Great Britain, so give them 0 points. You know, the Great British Entry, I don't know what they were called this year. They had like a weird name, didn't they?
I paid it so little attention, yeah. I really don't know.
But I think they were called Made in England or something. So let's just say they're called that. You know, let's imagine the three girls, Made in England, they've beaten the Brontosaurus. The Brontosaurus has come on. Now, the Brontosaurus is, I think it was a more vegetarian. So it's not going to go for them for food, but a big animal. You know, they've taken it down.
Do you remember a couple of weeks ago we were talking about who would win 100 men versus yes. a gorilla?
Yeah, yeah.
I think we should sort of, I mean, that's been floating around the internet for a little while now. I think people are getting a bit sick of it. Mm. So why don't we update it and say, who would win the entire Eurovision Song Contest artist catalogue versus a pair of velociraptors.
Yeah. I don't think the bloke in the bin bag is going to get very far. But as I said, I like to read about sciencey stuff and scientists.
Oh, yes, yes.
I was reading an article this week that drew my attention because it started to talk about Stephen Hawking.
Okay. If you're going to start quizzing me on some of his theorems, or what was his book?
What was it?
A Brief History of Time?
Yes, that was it, yes.
Yeah, if you're going to start quizzing me on that, you're going to be bitterly disappointed.
Don't worry, I mean, I've not gone anywhere near that book either. I mean, I've got a feeling that later in his life, he sort of said that some of that book he'd now sort of thought differently about. He'd come up with
different
theories.
So imagine if you spent years of your life learning it, understanding it, and then you've finally shut the book and he says, actually, I'm not sure about that. You think, fuck you.
Well, that's science, mate. The science changes, theories change, don't they? You know, that's what it's all about. I mean, I think they're even looking at some of Einstein's theories and go, well, maybe they're not quite right.
Just imagine, I finally understand it. It makes so much more sense. Yeah, actually, that's bollocks.
Yeah,
oh, fucking hell.
I just think, don't read those kind of books. If your brain can't cope, well, I once read a book. It was recommended to me. I went through a phase of being quite interested in psychology, you know, the human mind, Ben.
Yeah.
The human mind. And someone said to me, well, you should read this book. It's called The Psychology of the Self. It's by a guy called, I think his name was Heinz Kohut, I think his name was.
Ooh.
And they said to me, it's quite a, it's sort of more a textbook. So it's, you know, difficult read. And I did get through it. I read the whole thing. But when I got to the final page, I thought, I have not understood one thing in this book. If you were to ask me, the moment I closed that book, having finished the last page, what was that book about? I could not have told you.
Why did you persist with it?
Well, because I don't like giving up on things. I as I've got older, I have changed that. I have given up on a couple of books and films of late. But I went through, you know, most of my life, I've always gone, no, I've started it. I've started, so I'll finish. That's the way I've always looked at life. I've put this much time and effort into it. By the time I got halfway through this book, I thought, I've put this much time in now. I've got to see it through. But I didn't understand any of it.
Well, I respect that. I respect that mindset. But it does feel a little bit redundant. If you're genuinely getting nowhere, then, but mind you, you finished it, so well done.
Anyway, Stephen Hawking, right? I'm not going to worry about any of his scientific theories because this is more a coincidence about his life that I thought was incredible. And then that led me down a bit of a rabbit hole about some of history's weirdest coincidences.
Okay, what's the coincidence with the Hawk Master?
Well, his birthday, the 8th of January, 1942, was the 300th anniversary of the astronomer Galileo Galilei's death, right?
Galilei, we're going
with. Is it Galilei?
No, it is a can of worms. I'd have said Galileo Galilei.
That probably sounds better.
Now, one of us is wrong.
Ask Giselle.
Okay. She's out of my pocket. She's here.
Again, people would say, why don't you research this before you start recording? Well, because that's time and effort I can't be bothered to put into it.
Giselle, what is the surname and how do you pronounce it? Of Galileo.
Galileo's surname is Galilei, pronounced Galilei.
The American accent, and this is no criticism, but it's not really cleared it up for me.
I think you were right. It sounded like Galilee to me, so let's go with
it. To me, her pronunciation was sounding more like Galilei.
Anyway, Galileo. Right, sorry, forget his surname. Everyone just knows him as Galileo. I don't know why I said his surname in the first place. It's caused more problems than anything else.
No, I think me highlighting it didn't help. Sorry.
So anyway, his birthday was the 300th anniversary of Galileo's death. When Stephen Hawking died, it was the 139th anniversary of Einstein's birth. So two scientists that he would have revered, presumably, linked to his life.
That's it's not much to say about that other than that's just a nice little coincidence.
He also died. You have to think of this in American style for dates. He also died on the 3rd of the 14th, or Pi Day.
3.14159. So that'd be the 14th of March, is what you're saying he died. Okay.
Yeah.
because there isn't a 14th month. Well done, Ben. Okay, yeah.
Were you genuinely counting through there to work out what month?
I don't know if you missed it, but I was actually trying to recite as much of pi as I could. But
How far did you get?
3.14159, I believe, is as far as I can get.
Good. I don't know if that's right. Again, this is a point where I can go, brilliant. Well done, Ben. Could be nonsense. 3.14.
Well, I read it in a German psychology book many years ago. Yeah.
But I think you know, Stephen Hawking would have liked all those coincidences.
I think they're lovely.
So anyway, this did lead me down, as I say, this rabbit hole of other coincidences. I thought I'd share with you some of the others that I thought were extraordinary. But the assassination of Abraham Lincoln.
Oh, I've heard there's a bunch of coincidences about the Lincoln assassination.
Okay, now let me ask you, do you know who assassinated Abraham Lincoln?
Oh, God, that's a test of my memory. Was it John Wilkes Booth?
John Wilkes Booth was the man who...
Was I right?
You were right.
Fuck
yes.
Me. There's something in there.
Something you learned somewhere along the line that's in the back of your mind. That's the beauty of the mind, isn't it? Those little bits of nuggets are there. Right, so, John Wilkes Booth assassinated Abraham Lincoln in the... It was in a theatre in Washington, wasn't it? But the amazing coincidence is that Abraham Lincoln's eldest son, Robert Todd Lincoln, many years before was on a train platform and somehow fell off the platform and onto the rails. And a man heroically jumped on the tracks, pulled Robert Todd Lincoln off the tracks as the approaching train was coming, which would have surely maimed or at least killed Robert Todd Lincoln. The man who saved Robert Todd Lincoln was Edwin Booth, the brother of John Wilkes Booth.
Wow, that is freaky. That really is, I mean, the tale of two brothers as well. One nice one, one arsehole. Well, I mean, that is quite incredible.
I don't know what happened to John Wilkes Booth. I'm assuming I've got a feeling he was killed, wasn't he?
I don't know. I mean, I was impressed enough that I remembered his name. So I don't know his fate, but I remember his name. I've just pulled up, as we're on the subject, the things I was thinking of was actually a comparison list between President Abraham Lincoln and John F. Kennedy.
Oh, yeah.
And the coincidences are almost endless.
Go on.
Both Lincoln and Kennedy have 7 letters in their name.
Okay.
Both presidents were elected to Congress in 46, 1846 and 1946, okay. And later to the presidency in 60, so 1860 and 1960 became presidents.
Right.
Again, you don't sound overly bothered by these at the moment.
No, they're fascinating.
Both assassins, John Wilkes Booth and Lee Harvey Oswald, were both born in 39s. And were both, wait, now I know what you're thinking, so what? And were both known by their 3 names composed of 15 letters.
I mean, that is weird. That is a weird thing, though, isn't it? It's almost as if it is history repeating itself.
Booth ran from a theatre and was caught in a warehouse. Oswald ran from a warehouse and was caught in a theatre.
Wow.
See?
Oh, my God, this is so weird. It's so weird.
Both presidents were shot in the head on a Friday in the presence of their wives.
Well,
Lincoln had a secretary named Kennedy who told him not to go to Ford's Theater. Kennedy had a secretary named Lincoln and she warned him not to go to Dallas.
Wow.
And both Oswald and Booth were killed before they could be put on trial.
Wow.
There you go.
Amazing, isn't it?
Who'd have thought?
Incredible. When I was in Washington, when I did the little bus tour around Washington, they point out the Ford Theatre where he was shot. Is that what you
yes.
think it's called? I think you can go in, but I didn't. I thought it'd be a bit weird to just go and look at, presumably not even the actual seat he was sat in, unless they've kept it. Yeah, sort of a blood-stained theatre seat.
Go to the book depository in Dallas, and you can get to what they call the Assassination Museum. And... I've got to credit the great late Bill Hicks, who said, and it's painstakingly accurate because Oswald's not in it. I love that joke. then you can actually sort of try and witness the bit where, I mean, it's quite macabre. Oh, this is the spot where a man's head was blown all over the pavement.
Yes.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. But it's still so shocking, isn't it? I'm still kind of quite obsessed by the whole JFK thing. If ever there's a new documentary, you know, they always say, you know, new footage has emerged or something. You always think, oh, I'm going to watch that. And it's still quite shocking. It's a bit, you know, it is like the, if you ever still watch any footage of 9/11, like it's still kind of, oh my God, because in my mind, I've sort of put it in a little box because it was so shocking. And I think JFK is the same. Like, I was, you know, nowhere near being alive at that point, but just to watch it still, it's so shocking, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's how basically humans deal with trauma. It's, time makes things slightly better. Let's lock that up, put it away in a little box and try and bury it somewhere. But occasionally you will be shown footage and it's like, oh my God, yeah, that was terrible.
Right, here's another weird thing, right? There's an ocean liner stewardess called Violet Jessop. She had, let's just say, not the best track record of being on board certain ships. In 1911, she was on board the RMS Olympic, which collided with a warship and sank.
Right.
Well, guess where she was next in 1912?
Go on. Am I with the Titanic by any chance?
Yes, she was on board the Titanic. Obviously managed to get off and survive.
Wow.
And then in 1916, she was on the HMS Britannic, which ran into a German mine.
She sounds, with all due respect, like Uncle Albert from Only Fools and Horses.
Well, she survived each disaster. I mean, the odds of that being involved in three, you'd almost have to start saying, not that I'm a conspiracy theorist, but was she involved?
No, I would say she's a fucking jinx. If I saw her boarding, I'd get off.
Her nickname became Miss Unsinkable. Maybe they should have ducked her to see if she was a witch, see what happened.
But she was very much sinkable. She sank. She was on three sinking ships.
No, the ship sank. She didn't.
I suppose so, yes.
That was the amazing thing. Do you think she was like, I mean, I know it was women and children first, but do you think she was like, when anything happened, she was first off? She was like pushing people off. I wonder how many people who died on the Titanic was a result of her pushing her way through.
Yeah, I'm beginning to think you might be right. She might have been, you know, part of the problem here. Isn't it always funny how she's always, you know, got a life jacket on and by the boats before anyone else realises we're sinking?
No disrespect to the Jessop family, if you're interested.
No, please don't sue us.
Your relative was just very unfortunate. There's one that, this is an amazing story. This is called The Delayed Murder.
That sounds like an excellent title for a true crime podcast.
Well, I think they should make some sort of program about this. So in 1914, a French soldier called Henry Zeeland.
What is it with you and Germans today?
What is it? He's a French soldier.
German mad today.
He's a French soldier, mate. He just happens to have a German-sounding name.
But it's more than German-sounding. That's very German. I'm so amazed he's French.
Well, he defended his ex-girlfriend. Friend, right? So much so that her brother decided that Zeeland must die.
Oh dear.
So the brother shot Zeeland, but the bullet only grazed his face, luckily, and the bullet got lodged in a tree on Zeeland's property. But the brother thought, I've shot him, he's dead, he did a runner. 6 years later, Zeeland decided it was time to get rid of the tree by blowing it up with dynamite.
I know where this is going, and this is ridiculous. If it's going where I think it's going, that's preposterous.
The explosion propelled the bullet from the trunk straight into Zeeland's head, killing him instantly.
Fucking hell.
But why are you blowing up a tree?
I mean, that's a good question.
Get a fucking axe, mate. Get a... So we talked last week about the idiots who chopped down the sycamore gap tree. They didn't use dynamite. At least that's one thing you could say about them, if they didn't go that far.
Yes, even they were that stupid to apply dynamite to tree felling.
Why would dynamite be your first thought? That wouldn't be any books about tree felling, would it? It would be axe, saw...
Having had a brief period of my life working as a gardener, I can definitely understand the urge of taking the lazy bastard option out of things and just thinking, tree? Dynamite. Sod it. There's no use me, you know, building up lactic acid in my arms trying to cut this thing down. Sod that. Bit of dynamite. I've got it. I might as well use it. But that is unfortunate.
Okay, now the woman that was on those three ships that were sunk.
Yes.
That's a terrible misfortune. Imagine this, right? A guy called Tsutomu Yamaguchi in Japan, he was on a business trip in Hiroshima on August.
I love the fact that you had to tell me he was from Japan, because I thought he was from Croydon.
He was on a business trip to Hiroshima on August the 6th, 1945.
Okay.
Does that ring any bells?
1945... Hiroshima, the dropping of the atomic bomb.
Yes, the Enola Gay dropped the atomic bomb on the city. He survived the attack and returned to his hometown, He lived in Nagasaki.
Oh, for fuck's sake. That is some bad luck.
Just a few days later, the second atomic bomb was dropped on Nagasaki.
Wow.
Despite all the radiation he was exposed to, and despite being close to the blast on both occasions, he survived, lived to a ripe old age of 93 in the end.
Right. I thought you were going to say then fled to Croydon, where his luck really took a turn for the worse.
Now, Ben, before we wrap up this week,
yes,
I want to come back to something that came up in last week's podcast.
Oh, dear.
We discussed the news that came out a few weeks ago about the correct way of eating a chocolate digestive biscuit.
I dread things like this because when we were on the radio a few years ago now, it's depressing how long ago that was, we used to have what they called snoop sessions, where someone who pretended they knew what they were talking about would listen to our show and tell us what was wrong with it. How dare they? And
it's amazing they could do it in just an hour when there was so much wrong with it.
And also they'd pull us up on corrections and things that we could do better. So whenever I hear we've had some correspondence about last week's show, it just fills my heart with dread. I think, oh God, what did I say?
Well, we discussed the fact that the man from McVitie's, or whatever the company is, I think it was McVitie's, says that you should eat your chocolate digestive chocolate side down.
Yes, that was on BBC Radio 2 5 o'clock news.
And I did a little bit of research this week, and it was everywhere. It was a massive story.
Right? Really?
Yes.
Who cares?
Well, I think people do care. And I got a message this week from a friend of mine and long-term sufferer of the podcast, Anne.
Right, that's a lovely word. Oh, you know how some people call their fans or people who bother to listen, oh, the lovelies, or yeah, or our listeners, or our friends, our family. I think the sufferers would be a great name for people who listen to this.
Long-term sufferer of the podcast.
I love that. Let's have that.
Sent me a message this week. Now, this is something I didn't think about. She already brought a new angle to the story on this, and it's so obvious when you think about it, right? She sent me a message that said, just tried eating a chocolate hobnob chocolate side down. I thought, oh, hang on, it was a digestive. Of course, it doesn't matter, does it? Any chocolate topped or bottomed, as we're now discovering, biscuit would count here. Presumably, a Jaffa cake would have the same feel about it if you ate it chocolate side down.
I mean, she hasn't, just to nitpick, I know I said that I don't like people nitpicking me, but just to nitpick a little bit, she's not recreating the science of this to the letter, but I understand the principle of chocolate side down is the same, so I'll let it slide. Yes. But
as I say, why
A-minus
just,
so far.
Why should it just be restricted to the digestive, the chocolate? Just because the man from McVitie's says it. Do McVitie's make hobnobs? I should know that because I do have a hobnob right in front of me, but I don't have the packet in front of me. Anyway, she said, I can't believe the difference it made to the normal way of chocolate side up. So I think there's something in this.
Are you telling me, Trev, that our podcast made someone's life fractionally better?
Yes. We have.
Fucking hell.
After 279 episodes, have finally made a difference in the world. Well, by repeating something from someone else.
And you have absolutely made my day. Thank you so much. Keep listening. Maybe in another 280 episodes, you might get another little nugget of information that might help.
Well, I thought I need to back this up with actual science myself. I need to conduct the experiment. So I have a chocolate hobnob in front of me. I've gone for the hobnob because I like a chocolate digestive, but the hobnob to me is the greater biscuit. And I thought I'm going to go and buy a packet of chocolate hobnobs. Now, remember, I'm diabetic, so I'm willing to go into some sort of...
Oh, dear, Trev. I mean, listen, if we can pause the recording, I can go out and get some if you want. It's not worth the risk,
I'm
man.
I'm willing to go into a diabetic coma for the sake of...
Do you see what you've caused, Anne?
So, and I know that as you described last week, you're not a fan of the hobnob. Now, I thought what I'm going to do is take two bites of the chocolate hobnob, Ben, for scientific purposes, because I need to have a control to start with. So I'm going to, first bite of the hobnob is going to be chocolate side up. I'm going to see how that tastes, what
now,
the... chocolate to oaty goodness ratio is.
Me being a pedant, do you have anything to cleanse the palate between bites?
Maybe a little
splash of water to just to, yeah. You know, excellent, excellent.
I thought, there's no point in doing it if you don't cleanse the palate.
No, we've established you're a man of science this week,
yes.
And you are fulfilling that promise.
So I'm going to take a little bite from the chocolate hobnob, chocolate side up, right?
Even the sound effects to prove he's doing it. Look at that.
No, it's a very nice biscuit.
It's oaty. It's good. It's
oaty. Nothing like a flapjack, Ben.
No.
Which you scandalously put forward as a thesis last week. The hobnob was like a flapjack. It's very nice.
It is a bit.
It's nothing like a flapjack. It uses the same ingredients as a flapjack. I'll give you that. But the way in which it's prepared means it is not flapjack-like.
All the hours we've spent making this podcast, all the waffle, and it's biscuit chat, which has got people excited.
Biscuits and lawnmowers are the two things in recent weeks that have got people talking. That's what... So
very British. Love it.
But, you know, you get the chocolate coming through, but I would say the overpowering taste is the oaty goodness of a hobnob.
Okay, I need you to take a moment.
So I'm going to take a little sip of my palate cleanser.
Swirl. Are we spitting or are we swallowing, Trev?
Lovely.
That sounds like a swallow to me.
I don't do bird impressions. I'm now going to... I don't know if this is interesting or not, but I'm enjoying myself because I'm getting to eat a chocolate hobnob and I don't get to do that very often. So I'm now going to eat it. Chocolate down. You ready?
Okay. I'm on the edge of my seat. Again, more delightful sound effects. It's like ASMR biscuit podcast.
Wow.
Now. Oh, wow. Did you say wow?
The exciting news, Ben.
Yeah.
Is that you still get the OG goodness, but what you do get is a kind of delayed explosion of chocolate. It's almost like the tongue holds on to the chocolate taste for a moment and then bursts it into the mouth. And it is a different experience, Ben.
So maybe I was completely wrong to mock BBC Radio 2 for including this in the 5 o'clock news. Maybe this is a huge news story which should rightfully have its place in the main headlines.
Well, things like this should be news, and I did a little bit of digging around. I thought, well, what are if I'm missing out on this, and I hadn't done the experiment until just now, so I wasn't sure whether I was missing out or not, but clearly I was. So from now on, I will. And what's lovely, Ben, is because I can give you a live reaction, is although most of the hobnob is now gone, there's a few little bits of oatiness in my mouth still.
Right? Yes.
But the chocolate flavour has lingered. And that's a lovely thing, isn't it? I'm now getting an extended chocolate rush.
Right.
That could just be the diabetes kicking.
Yes. I'm thinking, do you have insulin anywhere near you?
I'm not that type, Ben. I don't need the insulin. It's fine.
Well, thanks, Anne. You've been really nice and you've induced a diabetic coma. So thanks for that.
But do you know what? There are other foods we're not eating right. Now, I'm not going to do all the experiments. We've done the hobnob experiment. That's passed with flying colours. Chocolate side down. It's the way forward. Apparently, we're eating burgers the wrong way around. You're supposed to eat them with the top of the bun, you know, with the sesame seeds on. That's got to be top down, Ben. How do you eat your burgers? All my life, I've been on this planet for nearly 48 years, and I've never eaten a burger any other way than having the top of the bun up, you know, top up.
I watch a hell of a lot of food stuff on YouTube and TV. So I've often seen people picking up burgers, flipping them upside down and then biting.
Yeah.
And the moment I saw it, I thought, why the hell are they doing that? And I looked into it and it turns out you are absolutely correct. Which to me just frustrates me because just build it the way it should be held then. Just put the lid on the... Just orient it in the way that you want us to eat it. Don't make us flip it over. It's just annoying.
I think the flipping of the burger is part of the process because what you do is it's about turning the sandwich upside down so then the juice from the meat has extra bread to soak into. So you do need to actually have the burger the right way, as many would see it, but then you do have to flip it to ensure that the meat juice flows into the bread-heavier side of the burger.
I hadn't thought of it like that. Okay. I knew it was a thing that people did, but it always just bothered me thinking, just build it the right way then. But no, that makes kind of sense.
This is the sort of stuff we should be taught in schools. Stop fucking algebra.
Yeah.
Tell us how to eat foods properly.
Are people really this? Well, I suppose people do care because obviously the biscuit thing caused a furore. Yes. So, yeah.
Pizzas. How do you eat your pizza?
Oh, if you... I've got a concern that you're going to tell me it's crust first.
No, although I do tend to eat my pizza crust first.
You know who else does that?
Mm.
Donald Trump.
Well, he's a good man, isn't he? Got some good ideas.
Just saying. I do think you have to be a bit of a maniac to eat pizza crust first. But normally I'll slice my pizza into eighths and then I'll
triangles.
Just... Yeah, and then bite from the tip of the triangle.
Yeah.
And then I'll either, when I get to the last bit... roll the crust into the last bit so it's not just like eating a little breadstick at the end, or I'll just dip the crust in a bit of, dip.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, I don't mind how you want to eat your pizza, that's fine, but triangles isn't the way forward. You're supposed to pick your pizza up and fold the whole thing into like a wallet shape. That's how they're eating in Napoli in Italy, the birthplace of the pizza. This whole triangular business, I don't know where that's come from, but it's wrong.
What, just folded in half? Isn't that calzone?
Well, no, I mean, that's a different... That's sealed, isn't it, the calzone?
So you're just folding your pizza in half?
Folding it over. Fold it over like a wallet, chomp into it. That's how you eat your pizza. We've been doing it wrong all these years.
Well, I'm not going to dare to upset the Italians or the Neapolitans or because they get very, dare I say, precious about the way we're supposed to eat things. So I'll just concede that they're right and leave them to it.
Finally, how do you peel your banana? I know you peel it. You peel it like all of the rest of us.
You don't.
You go from the top where the big stalk is and you pull that, don't you?
No.
Or do you not do it like that?
I used to. I don't anymore.
Do you now start from the bottom?
Well, there's two things here.
Yeah.
You can simply snap a banana in half, and that will work. And
who does that, though? That sounds like the work of a maniac.
It does look like the like a madman, like you say, just snapping a banana in half. But I, if I'm at home, if I'm out on the road, that's a different story. But if I'm at home,
well, hang on, you've got inside and outside eating options for bananas.
I'll run a knife down the back of the banana and just pop it out like that.
Okay. So inside you're using an implement.
Yeah.
But outside, what are you doing outside? Your outside peeling technique.
Outside I'm doing the way you'd expect most people to do it, just, yeah, peeling it back.
But what, from the top where the stalk is?
Yes.
Wrong way. Start at the bottom. Pinch the bottom. Pinch the bottom and then peel.
I'll try it next time.
It's what the chimpanzees do, Ben.
Yes, but I've got opposable thumbs.
Yeah, they haven't got a knife, have they?
No. So now who's winning?
Well, there we are. That's it for another Trev and Ben podcast. Haven't we learnt a lot today?
We have, and thank you, Anne, for your contribution to the show. It's been very helpful.
I think we've all come away more intelligent as a result of this week's
I think
podcast.
So, yeah. Does it ever trouble you, Trev, when you get feedback? Because it's sort of, I must admit, I sometimes forget anyone actually listens to this.
Well, not many people do, so, you know, it's
and I sort of think,
to hear.
I must probably try and watch my language or be a bit less of a gobby... person. I see, I almost swore again.
I know. They're respectable people who listen to this podcast.
I know. So I do apologise if I offend anyone.
Ring it into a gutter. But it's a gutter I'm comfortable in.
Yeah, we've been here for years.
Before we go, as always, a couple of recommendations. I've got a film to recommend. Now, I spoke to you last night, and not that we do much prep, but we do have a little conversation ahead of recording. And you said to me, well, what are you going to do for the rest of the evening? I said to you, well, I'm going to watch Mission Impossible 2, because recently it had been on telly, and I'd caught the opening sequence, but it was on late, and I wasn't going to stay up and watch it till 12:30 or whatever. So I thought, I'm going to record this. I'm not Tom Cruise's biggest fan, but the opening sequence, I thought, this looks exciting.
Can I ask? I did forget to ask you on the phone. Have you seen Mission Impossible 1?
Yes, I have seen.
Oh, you have? Okay.
Many years ago. I don't think I've ever seen any of the other. I think I saw one of the others with... I think Simon Pegg's in a lot of them, but I'd watched one that he's definitely in. Rogue Nation, I think, or something was...
Okay.
Watched. Anyway, I started watching it last night. I got about 15 minutes in, and I'm going to throw it into cautionary corner, even though it's a 25-year-old film. I was saying earlier about, you know, once I've started something, I tend not to give up. I thought, no, I can't do this. It's just Tom Cruise showing off. Look at me, I'm a stunt man. I do all my own stunts. I can drive a car fast. It was like, oh, this is just nonsense. So I turned it off, Ben, and I went on a search for something else, and I found a great film just dropped on Sky Cinema, Beetlejuice, the follow-up to the, was it 1988, I think, the original Beetlejuice film.
Yes, I mean, I haven't seen either. I was born in 1988, so that meant by the time I was sort of old enough to appreciate films, it was, even then, it was out of date.
Yeah, well, you must watch the original is fantastic.
I've heard very good things about Beetlejuice.
It is very good. It's very funny. I wouldn't say it's quite as good as the first one, but Michael Keaton is just phenomenal. He's just so good in it. And it's really, I mean, it's a Tim Burton film. It's just really out there.
I love Michael Keaton. I love him. He was my Batman. I think we talked about that a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
He was one of my favourite one-off characters in Frasier as Lilith's con man brother.
Yes.
I had a doormat that commemorates a Michael Keaton line from that episode of Frasier. So yes, I'm a big, big Michael Keaton fan. So I should, out of sheer respect for the man, back and watch both.
You must watch both. I think the first one tops it slightly, but the second one, well worth a watch. It's on Sky Cinema at the moment. By the way, talking of Michael Keaton films, a film I've not seen for years, is it called Multiplicity? The one where he sort of clones himself. And then there's lots of different versions of his character. That's a brilliant film.
I have not seen that.
All the titles have gone out of my head now because I'm of an age where I can't remember titles. There's another brilliant Michael Keaton film where he, him and a group of others, they sort of escape an asylum of some sort. It's got Peter Boyle in it as well. That's a brilliant film, but I can't remember what it was called.
Okay, I can confirm that Multiplicity is the title of a Michael Keaton film, that'll be it.
Right, I'm going to try and find the title of the other one before we finish. But the other thing I'm going to throw in as a recommendation this week is a podcast on BBC Sounds. It's a one-off interview from BBC West Midlands with Jasper Carrot, who's just turned 80.
Oh, and good man.
It's a lovely interview. I'm a massive Jasper Carrot fan. He's one of my heroes as I was growing up. I saw him live once. He was fantastic. I think it's a real shame he's not on telly much anymore, but he's still touring. He's still doing stuff. And it's just a lovely chat for an hour with one of, let's face it, one of comedy's greats.
Absolutely. And one little potential red flag I've got to ask, and you might not have the information at your fingertips, but as you said, it's on BBC Sounds. Yeah. Is it only available for a limited time?
Well, it says it's available for over a year. So I think it's going to be around about a year. So, if you get a chance to listen to that, it's a lovely listen. Can I just say also, why isn't The Detectives shown more on television? That was a brilliant series, him and Robert Powell. And it's never on anywhere. I recently found a couple of episodes on, is it Vimeo? But the problem with that, Vimeo seemed to crash my computer every time I tried to watch it, so I had to give up. But I love that show, and it's never on. What's it called now? You and Gold, or You and TV Gold, or whatever it's called now. Like, Only Fools and Horses is one of the best TV shows ever made. But they show that ad infinitum on an endless fucking loop, right? So you can't keep watching that over. Put The Detectives on for a little while. Why can't we see that? One of the best TV shows. Loved it.
Well, all right. Maybe you should write to them.
See, I started angry and I'm finishing. By the way, that film with Michael Keaton is called The Dream Team. Christopher Lloyd's in it as well. I've forgotten he's in it.
Oh, okay.
And they're basically, I mean, probably not very PC these days, because I'll read you the synopsis. Four mental patients.
Yeah, okay.
On a field trip in New York City must save their caring chaperone. It's a brilliant film. Again, I haven't seen it for years, but I suspect TV Channel has made me think, because of the nature of it, it may not be suitable. But great film.
Yeah, I'll take your word for it.
There we are. That's it for this week. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget you can get in touch with us anytime about anything. We're at Trevor X and on Blue Sky, and we'll catch you again next week. Till then, stay safe, stay well, take it easy.
Bye.